You are listening to an American Free Press podcast. Joining me on the line is the president and founder of Stand Up America Now, Pastor Terry Jones. Pastor Jones, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Pastor Jones, you've been in the news a lot recently because of the Koran burning. Well, you had first, I guess, a mock trial on the Koran. It was found guilty and it was executed. Is that right?
That's correct.
Before we get into that, because I do want to touch on that, this new enterprise that you put together, Stand Up America Now, can you tell our listeners what that's all about?
Yeah, it's mainly about the title of it. It's about calling Americans, churches, to actually stand up and speak out on issues that are important to them. As many people are very concerned about the direction that our country is going in, whether it be our national debt, whether the growing threat of Islam around the world, the growing threat of Islam or Sharia in our own country, holding rallies, meetings, press conferences, educating the people, encouraging the people to exercise their First Amendment rights and to stand up.
Okay, and I'm sure a lot of Americans would agree that the country is heading in a direction that nobody's really happy about.
Correct.
Yeah. Let me just mention your website here so the listeners can have it up while they're hearing this interview. It is www.doveworld.org, and that's DoveWorld.org. Now, I was looking over a couple of websites, Pastor Jones, and your website and a couple of pieces that were written in the mainstream media and also Wikipedia. Have you seen your entry in Wikipedia at all?
Actually not. I think I did glance over it a little bit, but I can't actually say I have really read it, no.
It says here that you're a native of Missouri, is that right?
Yes, I was born and raised in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. That's correct.
How do you say that town?
Cape. And then Girardeau.
It's like a French-sounding word.
Actually, it was a French settler who settled and established the city. That's correct.
And it says here you were born in October 1951, and you moved to Germany, and you founded a charismatic Christian church. You have been in Germany for many years, haven't you?
That's correct. I first pastored some here in the States. I pastored in there, Cape Girardeau, Missouri. I pastored in Owensboro, Kentucky. And I pastored in Mayfield, Tennessee. After a period of time, the organization that I was with, they were starting churches overseas, and we felt led to go into the mission field, my wife and myself. So we first went to Munich, Germany, where we established a church, and we spent 2 years there. And after that two-year period, we moved to Cologne, where she died in 1996, we spent around 30 years.
In this article, or in this compilation of, I guess, what Wikipedia would consider facts, and I found that over the years that Wikipedia does have many errors in it, some serious, some not so serious, but it says here, according to the German magazine Der Spiegel, the congregation kicked Jones out in 2008 due to the climate of fear and control that he employed, which included elements of brainwashing and telling congregants to beat their children with rods. Is this something that is accurate?
I would not consider that very accurate. As I said, I have not read all of Wikipedia. I did read some of the stuff, and there was definitely errors in that. I actually established a church and pastored it for, like I said, I think a little bit over 25, 27 years. During that time, I believe the leadership and the church itself, they were generally very much in agreement in the direction that I was taking the church. After several years, could be for many reasons, the leadership became very unhappy with the direction that I was going. I'm not sure exactly what the problem was. I think that they felt I was perhaps too driving, too pushy, too goal-orientated. And at that time, they became indeed, as it says, they are very, very unhappy. And through their actions, did indeed make it pretty impossible for me to end up staying there. So I then turned it over, or was forced to turn it over, to some of the leaders and the elders that were there, the pastors who were remaining, who worked with me through the years. They also left. One of them was an American who then came later here back to America. At that time, it was, of course, a very devastating experience. As I look back at it, it was probably the best thing to ever happen in my life, other than my actual conversion to Christianity, to Jesus. It was probably by far the best thing to ever happen to me, because if that had not happened, I would have probably never came back to America. I probably would have stayed there. If I would have never come back to America, I would have never been involved in the present-day work that I'm involved in. Of course, events like 9/11 would not have happened. International Judge Tikaron Day. We would not, of course, have now the opportunity to speak up on behalf of Christians and minorities in Muslim-dominated countries. We would by no means be able to have the opportunity and influence that has now opened up to us. So as I said, although at the time it seemed very bad, very unfair, very devastating, it definitely turned out to be, as they term sometimes, a blessing in disguise.
So the claims that you wanted the congregants to beat their children with rods, that's not accurate then?
That would not be accurate, no. We do believe in disciplining children. That is definitely true, but we do not beat children. As you can imagine, having been in a foreign country for 30 years, when you live in a country like Germany, anything outside of the normal Catholic or Lutheran church is automatically considered wrong or bad or considered a sect or cult. So as you can imagine, if you did your research, we were under investigation many, many times. We had our church raided by the police. We had our apartments raided. We were under investigation many, many times, and they never were able to find anything at all wrong with our finances, with our books, or with the way we handled the people or the children.
What's the correct term? It wouldn't be sect. Would it be brand of Christianity, or is it sect?
Our correct term, I'm just saying what other people would call it, our correct term of our church here is, or of the church there, would be simply a non-denominational Christian church. We would call it non-denominational as far as our doctrinal beliefs. They probably do not differ much from any other Christian organization. In other words, they would not be much different than the Baptist or the Methodist or the Pentecostal. We believe in the inspiration of the Word of God. We believe in the Trinity, the Virgin Birth, the Crucifixion, the Resurrection, the Blood Atonement. Our actual doctrines would not differ from basically any other Christian organization.
Okay. And how many members are in the church now? And that's Dove World, right? That's what it's called?
Dove World Outreach Center, that's correct. And also, just to throw in there, we also have our other website, which is standupamericannow.org. The church now, as you can imagine, and I'm sure has been also widely publicized, when we got involved in this particular venture concerning Islam, speaking out, holding demonstrations, as you can imagine, the size of the church diminished. Basically, I think it would be safe to say that we have lost every member of the church. I don't know how abreast you are with Christianity or church, but this is not the kind of activity that the normal average American Christian likes. They work all week in a job. They have possibly Saturday off. They come to church on Sunday. They do not want to necessarily be challenged. They do not want necessarily to have the news media or the police or somebody else show up at their door. So this is actually not the way to obtain members, finances, or cause church growth. So the people that we have left here with us would be the people who I have known for approximately 10 to 25 years, who are definitely very much committed and believe in the present calling and mission that we have.
So how many are left about?
If we were really generous, I would say 20.
Okay. In 2010, it says you published a polemic called Islam is of the Devil. Is that something that's available for sale that people could buy?
Oh, yes. It was published by a very large organization here in America called Creation House. Perhaps you're familiar with the term Creation House, Charisma Magazine. They are actually the ones who actually published and brought the book out originally. Once we got to be a little bit too hot for them, they disassociated themselves from us. But, of course, that book can be bought through our website. That book is definitely available, yes.
Both websites or just doveworld.org?
That book is available, as far as I understand. It's available on Amazon, and it is available through both of the websites, yes.
Okay, great. This is from Wikipedia. It says that the book claims Islam promotes violence and that Muslims want to impose Sharia law in the United States. Now, just for the benefit of our listeners, there's an organization called the Thomas More Law Center. Have you ever heard of that, Pastor Jones?
No, unless it has another name. I've heard of the Southern Poverty, I think it's called the Southern Poverty Law Center, but I have never heard, I believe, of this one.
Okay. The Thomas More Law Center, and that's Moore with one O, they are lawyers, and they believe that if Islam is not countered, that there's a possibility that the United States will have Sharia law in certain communities where Muslims are prevalent. So this is something that I want the listeners to know, that you're not just talking about. This isn't some extreme view. This is something that mainstream organizations are concerned about.
Yes.
And that the listeners should go to thomasmore.org and brush up on what they're doing. And I interviewed the senior counsel from that organization. We had an interesting conversation. And what I learned is that, in fact, this is something that is of concern to a lot of Americans, because they survive off of donations. And if Americans didn't feel that this was an issue that is of concern to them, then, of course, they wouldn't make the donations. So.
Right.
Now, in 2010, you had scheduled to have a Quran burning. There was a lot of uproar with the mainstream media. I had mentioned the mainstream media before, and I just want to make a quick comment on that. There's a sizable population in this country that does not listen or watch the mainstream media, because they believe that the mainstream media is part of, among other things, but part of the military, industrial, financial complex, that they have incestual links with these other organizations. So this prevents the mainstream media from giving us the kind of news that they should, basically the truth. A lot of this news is censored, and there's actually an organization called ProjectCensored.org that tracks the news that is censored or downplayed by the mainstream media. So when I'm reading this information, or when I'm asking these questions, a lot of this comes from the mainstream media. So I want to put that little caveat in there, okay?
Okay.
During that 2010 Quran burning ceremony that you wanted to hold, the mainstream media publicized it heavily for reasons that would obviously benefit them. And it got to the point where it went all the way up to President Obama. Of course, you decided not to burn the Quran. Did the president communicate with you? Is that what happened?
Actually, he did not. No. I had just heard that him and other government officials had spoke out, of course, against our planned burning of the Quran, but I did not personally speak with him. I did personally speak with Mr. Gates.
Gates, the Secretary of Defense?
Yes, definitely. Yes, yes.
Okay. So Gates called you?
Yes, he did.
And how long did you spend on the phone with him?
I only spent a few minutes with him on the phone. He called me, I think it was the Thursday of that week. It was a very good conversation. He was, of course, very, very cordial. He didn't really put any pressure on me. He just simply asked me that if I would reconsider the burning of the Quran.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, you decided not to do it. And now we'll fast forward to this year, and just recently, you had another Quran burning ceremony scheduled, and this one actually went through. Did anybody like Gates try to contact you to ask you to call it off?
No, we had declared March the 20th the International Judge the Quran Day. We did not get any calls or any contact at all from the government. We had our usual meetings with the FBI. I think we even had one meeting here with the local police, but we got no official call or information from the government, no.
Okay. Tell our listeners about the trial, what happened in there. Did you actually read verses from the Quran to explain why it is that you think that the Quran should be held guilty?
Yeah, the trial has a little bit of a background, if you want me to share that.
That'd be great.
Of course, the 9/11 event, and we called that off. Of course, during the 9/11 event, there was quite an uproar, especially from the Muslim community. They felt that that was a very unfair act, that we had, to a certain extent, already judged the book and decided to burn it. So after we called the event off, we still wanted to raise an awareness of the radical element of Islam. It was still our belief that if the Quran is strictly followed, it does or can lead to radical activity, to terrorist activities. So we wanted to continue, even though we had called off the burning, we wanted to continue to raise an awareness of that. During the course of the year, we did a couple of events in that direction. We had a protest in front of the Egyptian consulate in Los Angeles. We had a few other events to raise an awareness of the radical element of Islam. And then we came up with the idea and we thought, okay, we will give the Muslim community a chance. They felt 9/11 was unfair. We had unfairly judged the Quran. So we decided, okay, we will put the Quran on trial. And we will invite experts on both sides of the fence to come and defend the Quran. We had it set up as a normal trial. We had a prosecuting attorney, and we had a defense attorney, and we had three charges against the Quran. We had a judge, and we had a 12-member jury. The trial was done in Arabic and in English. The defense attorney was Sheikh Imam El Hassan, who lives in Dallas, Texas, and is in charge of the Islamic Center. The prosecuting attorney was Ahmed Abaza, actually a very prominent family in Egypt. If you were to Google or look up his name, he converted to Christianity in 1985, then escaped very much persecution and actually torture by his own family. Finally found his way to Canada and a little bit later to America. He was the prosecuting attorney. It was set up that each party had around 2 or 2.5 hours to present their case. At that time, they could call witnesses. Mr. Abaza had several witnesses, one of them being a prince from Kuwait who had converted to Christianity, who came, gave his testimony, talked about how he and his family had funneled several million dollars of their oil money to terrorist groups. There was a couple of ladies who gave them testimony. I would like to emphasize again that these were not people just down the road who had a grudge against Islam. These are people who are either Muslims or people who were converted Muslims. In other words, these people were all of Arab descent. Mm-hmm. They were born and raised in Arab countries and lived under Islamic rule. So they definitely knew the dangers of Islam. They were given, like I said, around 2, 2.5 hours to present their case. And then, of course, the case went to the jury. The jury then came back with the guilty verdict. We had three charges against the Quran, and it was found guilty on all three charges. And one of the forms of punishment that we had offered on our website, provided that the Quran was found guilty, was burning. We had four choices on our website: burning, drowning, shredding of the Quran with face of firing squad. The people were allowed to vote. The one that had the largest majority was burning. So after the Quran was found guilty and pronounced guilty on those three charges, it was then burned.
Mm. What were the charges?
Number one, the Quran is charged with training and promoting of terrorist activities around the world. Number two, the Quran is charged with the death, rape, and torture of people worldwide whose only crime is not being of the Islamic faith. Number three, the Quran is charged with crimes against women, against minorities, against Christians, and with the promoting of prejudice and racism against anyone who is not a Muslim.
You burned the Quran. During the first burning, or the burning that was going to happen, you were threatened with, I guess, fines, and you're in Gainesville, Florida. The Gainesville Fire Department refused to grant you a burning permit. Is that right?
That's true. That's true.
Mm. And it says here that the bank that was holding the mortgage on the church property demanded immediate repayment of the balance, and the property insurance was canceled. How did you get around that? Did that actually happen?
That actually did happen. That happened pretty early on in our efforts against Islam. We did some investigation, and some other people did too. Our loan is being held here by RBC Bank. That is the Royal Bank of Canada. We found out that that particular bank has very heavy ties to Islam, has ties to Sharia banking. Then after we did our research, not a surprise, we talked to the bank. We asked them to appeal that, and they gave us an extension, which is actually now due in the month of May. We are to have that paid off, unless they, of course, grant us another extension. Our insurance has been canceled actually a few times. The latest time was here just recently. We actually even got terrorist insurance. We have all of the proper insurance that you would need for the type of activities that we are involved in. But after the March 20th event, and I guess all of the news media and all of the things that happened, we received a letter, I believe, only a few days ago, and they have canceled our insurance as of sometime in May. So now we are, of course, in the process of trying to find another insurance company that will insure us. As you probably can imagine, that is not so easy.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like they all got together, all of these entities, because even the web hosting company that hosted your website disconnected it, citing a violation of their terms of use policy. How did you overcome that?
We have been, as you can imagine, under constant attack from overseas concerning our internet, our website. Yeah, they just overnight, I'm not even sure they informed us. I think we all of a sudden discovered that our website was gone and contacted them. We talked to them. There was no way to work it out. They canceled us, threw us out. So what we had to end up doing was buying our own server and having everything here locally done. In other words, we do everything ourselves. We happen to have people who are competent enough in that area. We do it all ourselves. And, of course, we ended up purchasing a firewall that would protect us from these type of attacks. So we were able to somehow, I guess, through the knowledge that our people have and by the grace of God, we were able somehow to survive that.
Mm-hmm. And then another matter, the city of Gainesville said it would charge you guys $200,000 for security. How did you overcome that?
That came also to us as a great surprise when we first decided to do the September 11th event, International Burn a Quran Day. We advertised that here on our church property. Of course, the police showed up here pretty quick, and we met together with them. And their very first response was they would not be able to provide us with any type of security or protection because on that same day there was a football game. That's the honest truth. We thought that is definitely a little bit of the sign of the times. So we said, okay, that is fine. Then we will just protect ourselves. We will do whatever we can do, and thought the matter was taken care of. A little bit later, they showed back up again and said, no, we will provide you with security, and which they did. And there was never at any time any mention that we would be responsible for those costs. We assumed that that was just their normal job and responsibility to protect their citizens, even though their citizens may be involved in something that they are in agreement with or are not in agreement with. Anyway, there was never any mention of us being financially responsible for those costs until after everything was over. And then they began to say they were going to send us a bill for around $200,000. As of this day, we have received one bill for around $65,000, of which, as we checked into it, we, number one, have no intention on paying it, and number two, are not obligated to pay it.
And the mortgage, is it still $140,000?
Yes, to pay off the rest of the mortgage, it is still around $140,000. That's correct.
Okay. What do you think is going to happen with that?
Well, what we're trying to do right now, or what we tried to do back then, was to raise the $140,000 so we could just simply pay it off. That we were not able to do. We are still in the process of doing that. It seems as though right now, as we have continued on, and of course our next event is in Dearborn, Michigan on April 22nd, definitely I would say the tide has turned almost 100%. We are now getting quite a bit of support through emails, letters, and telephone calls. We are also in the process, and have been for quite a while, of actually selling the property here because we have here quite a large property, around 20 acres, and we simply do not need 20 acres to do what we are doing. Plus, we would like to relocate. Gainesville is somewhat of a small town where we'd like to relocate possibly farther south down in the Tampa Bay area. So that's basically what we are trying to do right now.
Okay. And I just want to remind listeners of the First Amendment to the Constitution, and I want to read this here just so everyone's refreshed. Amendment 1, Freedom of Religion and the Press, and this was ratified on December 15, 1791. I'm getting this from the usconstitution.net website. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. The part that's applicable to religion, of course, says that no law could be made respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. The actions that were taken against you, it would seem to me, based on this, that your religion was being prohibited, being restricted. Would you agree with that, or am I out of line with that?
I would definitely agree with that. I think as we find that definitely we have lost quite a bit as far as our real freedom of speech here in America. It has been definitely our experience that as long as you stay on the surface of our society, everything seems to be just fine. But as far as if you begin to rock the boat, if you begin to raise up issues that are uncomfortable, that people do not want to see or recognize, definitely you receive an enormous amount of pressure from either the government or from different agencies. We have all of the time people coming here expressing their support, but they are afraid to speak out. because if they speak out, they're in fear of losing their job. So definitely, I think we're definitely in a state where it is very much time for the American people to stand up and speak their opinion.
Mm-hmm. And of course, besides the actions that were taken against you and the church that we just went through, you also have received in the past and maybe even the present death threats, haven't you?
We continue to receive death threats, especially here after our March 20th event. And now, as I said, we are holding this demonstration in Dearborn, Michigan. We have received out of Dearborn, Michigan, several death threats that if we come there, we will go home in a box. I think as of right now, we have received over 400 death threats, plus Hezbollah has put out a reward or bounty on my life for $2.4 million.
That's nice of them. Also, on the Wikipedia site, it says that a suicide bomber has threatened to drive a truck into the church, and others have discussed setting the building on fire. This is something that you're familiar with?
All of those things have happened. We have had death threats that range just from we are going to kill you to definitely things that were very, very specific. We received one time a letter where they said we are driving down here. We are armed with explosives. We are going to come in and kill you. You burnt the Quran. We are going to burn you. We are going to blow up the church. During the March 20th event, we got a death threat saying that there was outside a sniper with a long-range rifle who was going to kill me as soon as I walked out the door.
Are you afraid?
I wouldn't say at this time I'm afraid. I don't actually feel afraid. I mean, we are definitely cautious. As you're probably aware of, most all of us went through some training. We have weapons. I carry with me at all times a .40 caliber semi-automatic. I have a concealed weapons permit. In fact, we just had yesterday an instructor here instructing us further on how to handle those weapons and on some areas of self-defense. Of course, we are very cautious wherever we go, when we start the car, when we go out at night, when I travel. A lot of times we are met at the airport by the police who watch over us. We, of course, inspect the hotel room when we go there. If possible, we try not to register under our name. The premises here is, of course, locked, what it wasn't in the past. So definitely we are much more cautious. I think at this time we are not afraid. We are very, very determined that this awareness and that this message must get out and are willing pretty much to pay any price that is necessary to raise this awareness.
Okay. And after the first scheduled Quran burning, it says here in Wikipedia that in October of last year, a car was donated to you from a New Jersey Hyundai dealership owned by former New York Giants Brad Benson. What was the whole idea with that, with the car?
Yeah, the whole story was, we heard about this after we had called off the 9/11 event. After we called that off, somebody contacted us. And they said, hey, there's this dealer up in New Jersey who was going to give you a car if you called off the 9/11 event. Of course, we knew nothing about that. We definitely would not sell out our convictions for a car. I mean, that's, of course, ridiculous. But we went ahead and contacted him anyway. And we thought, okay, if he still wants to give that car away, there's no way that we could take it. We didn't feel as though that would be honorable or that would look proper. But if he still wanted to give it away, then we would fly up there, we would receive the car, and we would pass it on to another non-denominational or non-profit organization. We were looking for an organization that helped battered Muslim women. So we did find an organization there. I think the name of the organization was called Women Rising, something like that. They help not only Muslim women, but just in general, battered women who had left their circumstances and needed temporary assistance and housing. We flew up there. He presented the car to us. There was quite a little ceremony there. And at that very same time, the representative from that organization was there, and we passed the keys directly on to him.
Okay. The recent one that happened on March 20th, where the Quran was found guilty of those three charges and it was burned. When the folks voted on the website, how many people voted? Did you keep a track of that?
I don't know exactly. I know the last time I looked, there were several hundred votes.
Okay. Reactions, of course, to this. In Afghanistan, most of us read about it. Most of us saw some photos. Iran, Pakistan, Gambia, wherever that is. And, of course, the United States. Let me ask you a question before we talk about this. Let's say that I wanted to burn the Bible, right? For whatever reason, even if I didn't hold a trial, I just said, you know what, I want to burn the Bible. And it was publicized, like the Quran burning was. Do you think that Christians would murder Muslims because I burned the Bible?
Oh, absolutely not. The Bible has been burned many times. The flag has been burned. Definitely not. I know as a pastor, I've been a pastor for over 30 years, I definitely believe that the Bible is the inspired word of God. I believe that it is the one and only holy book. But if you were to burn the Bible, I do not know of any Christians that would call for your death. Christians would probably be disappointed. They would probably pray for you. They would probably feel sorry for you. But that would be the extent of our reaction, definitely.
Mm-hmm. They wouldn't call for jihad.
They definitely would not. The only thing they would possibly call for, if it was publicized enough, they would possibly get some churches together, some Christians together, and call a prayer meeting on your behalf.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What happened, of course, as most of us know, in Afghanistan, some radical elements smashed into the United Nations assistance mission in Afghanistan, and they murdered several international members of the UN, and they decapitated two of them. In Iran, the Iranian ambassador to the United Nations condemned the burning and called for your prosecution. In Pakistan, there was a fatwa, which is, of course, a Muslim edict, calling for anyone who kills you would get, I guess, is this the $2.4 million you were alluding to?
Of course, I understand there were two rewards put out. They totaled $2.4. One was for $2.2, and the other one was for approximately $200,000.
Okay. And as I mentioned earlier, the Gambian government has called for your arrest, calling the action heinous and asked for your prosecution to proceed as soon as possible. Here in our own country, our president, Barack Obama, he strongly condemned both the Quran burning, calling it an act of extreme intolerance and bigotry, and the outrageous attacks by protesters referring to them as an affront to human decency and dignity. So I guess he covered both sides there of the issue, right?
Yeah.
When you heard about what happened, especially in Afghanistan, what was your reaction to that?
We're, of course, devastated by that. It is, of course, terrible any time someone is killed, murdered, or any time someone's life is cut short for any reason. I understand that very well. As I mentioned earlier, my wife of 25 years died suddenly at the age of 42. She was supposedly in perfect health, and one night just simply died of a heart attack. So I understand what it's like to suddenly lose someone. I think that that's definitely a terrible, terrible thing. We personally feel no responsibility for that. We do feel very strongly, and that's really one of our end goals of Stand Up America Now. We do feel very strongly that the people who did this and the countries that allow this because of their religious beliefs, because of their lack of human rights and civil rights, their lack of proper laws, we believe these countries should be held accountable. We would like to see the President of the United States, other Western countries, call these countries accountable in the United Nations. I believe countries like Pakistan, Afghanistan, Saudi Arabia, Muslim-dominated countries, they should be forced to come out of the Middle Ages. They should be forced to adapt normal human rights, normal civil rights, freedom of speech, freedom of religion. As tragic as this whole event is or was, we have to remember Islam in these countries. They have been killing the people for many, many generations just simply because they were Christians, simply because they were non-believers, simply because they were homosexuals. And we feel it's time that the United Nations calls these nations to accountability. They should be forced to change their laws, or in our opinion, they should be removed from the United Nations. I realize that our president spoke out. It's my personal opinion that as our president did that, he actually spoke in contradiction to the Constitution. I believe as the president of the United States, it is his job to uphold the Constitution. We were indeed within our constitutional rights. I believe that it is his job to uphold our right to do what we did because of the Constitution. I believe that's the president's job. If Mr. Obama wants to speak out as a private citizen, provided he is, if he wants to speak out as a private citizen, that is something else. but I believe that everyone who holds a public office, whether it be a military personnel, whether it be the President of the United States or some other government official, that is their number one job is to uphold and protect the Constitution of the United States, and we war within our constitutional rights.
Mm-hmm. Okay. On April 1st, I read a story over the internet. CNN won't air hateful interview with pastor who burned Quran. We've been talking now for about an hour. During this interview with this mainstream media reporter with quotes around it, John King, did you guys talk about anything other than what we just talked about?
No, I think the only thing extra that we talked about is we had a little bit more emphasis, and we talked a little bit about Dearborn, Michigan, and our up-and-coming protest. We had actually quite a good interview. It also lasted around 15 or 20 minutes. It was by no means hateful. I was actually quite surprised by that. I think probably the interview was maybe a little bit too good for them or a little bit too reasonable, because the interview was by no means hateful. In fact, just the opposite. He had asked me what our message was to Dearborn, Michigan when we go up there, and I think it was a very reasonable answer, and it is actually what our message is to Muslims here who live in the United States. I said, we are going to Dearborn, Michigan to protest against jihad and Sharia. We are not going to Michigan to protest Muslims. We are not protesting against the Quran, the mosque, or their existence. Muslims who have been born in America or who have immigrated to this country, they are welcome here. I made that very clear that our message to Islam in America is one of welcome and warning. They are welcome here. They are protected under the First Amendment. They are welcome to practice their religion, build mosques. They are welcome to evangelize. What we expect of Muslims in America is that they honor and obey and submit to the Constitution of the United States. If they do that, we have no problem with the Muslim community in America. If they desire, and if they have a secret agenda, in other words, they desire in some form to change or alter our Constitution and institute Sharia, then those Muslims are actually no longer welcome in America. That was actually our main conversation during that interview.
Mm-hmm. That was the hateful part of it, I guess.
That was the hateful part, yes.
Mm. Yeah. Now, of course, in this article, it says viewers will never see the interview. Did they happen to get you a copy of the interview?
They did not. I think my office either contacted them or they were supposed to contact them and see if we can get a copy of that. Yeah, I found that very, very strange when you look at all of the things that the news media does publish. Plus, I'm by no means a news media expert, but I was always under the impression that it was the news media's job to simply report the news, not necessarily their job to determine whether or not it was good or bad, right or wrong, and make decisions for the public. But the public was allowed to watch it and listen to it, and then they would form their own opinion.
Mm. Yeah. No. Yeah, no, definitely not. Unfortunately. Because many Americans believe, many still do, in the integrity of the political, the financial, and the media systems. And the fact is that as time goes on, many, many more Americans are waking up to see that these three in particular are not on the average American side. And in fact, they're not going to give the news as they should. So this is a perfect example, as you just said, and that's why I brought it up, that the mainstream media is not here to give us the uncensored news, but they're here to give us the censored news. And that's why I said it, because during our conversation, I didn't sense any hate, and you're a completely reasonable guy, and I'm sure that the listeners will come to that same conclusion. But this is very important, because they're nailed on this, and you can nail the mainstream media every day, several times a day, on similar things. So they do censor it. There is no hate in what you just said. You're stating your opinion, our rights that were given to us by the Constitution, and you simply said that you want the Muslim citizens of this great country to submit to the Constitution. And of course, the word Islam means submission, but it means submission to God. And that's the whole, I guess, issue here, is that they feel that God is on a higher level than the rule of law, the Constitution. Is that accurate to say?
I think that would be accurate. From everything I have read, I believe it's definitely the desire of Islam to do here, as they have done all over the world, to try to make the Quran the highest authority of the land. It's interesting that we just a couple of days ago got ourselves a letter from a serviceman who is stationed in Afghanistan, completely supporting our actions, encouraging us to stand up for our rights and freedom of speech. He says that he is in Afghanistan. He has seen firsthand the radicalness of Islam. He said he has seen there himself kids who disobey their parents. Their hands and feet are stuck in boiling water. So he definitely has seen firsthand how cruel the religion can be and has encouraged us to stand up and continue on.
Mm-hmm. We talked about a lot of the financial elements that the church has been confronted with over the past year or so. On your website, doveworld.org, I see there's a little button there that says donate, you know, the PayPal button that says show your support. How important are donations to your organization?
Of course, as you can imagine, that is how we exist. That is how we pay our bills. Our staff are able to continue on with raising up this awareness and traveling. Yeah, if they're interested in donating, they should be able to find information there on our website, doveworld.org, and also on our website, standupamericannow.org. They can donate through PayPal, or, of course, they can send donations to our address.
And what is that address?
5805 Northwest 37th Street, Gainesville, Florida, 32653.
And should they attention it to anybody or anything?
Not necessarily. If they just send a note along or they just write on the check that it is a donation, then it will be handled in that way.
Okay. And they would make it out to Dove World Outreach Center. Is that right?
That is true. That is true. Yeah.
Okay. Just want to let our listeners know about some events that are coming up. That Dearborn event, is that the main event that's happening?
Yeah, that right now is our next event. That will be on April 22nd. We will be demonstrating against Sharia and Jihad. We will also be talking about what happened there in Afghanistan, what we would like our government to do. That will be taking place on April 22nd, right there in front of the Islamic Center, starting at 5:30.
Right, and of course, April 22nd is Good Friday, right?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yes.
Okay. Did you select that town for any particular reason? Because I know it has a high population of Muslims, isn't that right?
Right. I think that would be about the main reason. As far as I am aware of, I believe Dearborn has around 40 or 50% Muslim. The Islamic Center there is the largest center in America. So we felt that would be a good place, an appropriate place to go and raise this awareness concerning jihad and Sharia.
Okay. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, the Thomas More Law Center has been involved in lawsuits in Dearborn. And there is a concern with this group that Sharia law is gaining a foothold there. And there's plenty of evidence to show that that actually might be happening. In fact, if you go to their website, thomasmore.org, you'll see one of the articles there. It says Sharia in the USA, Christians jailed for preaching to Muslims. And this is exactly what you're talking about. Again, this is something that listeners need to pay attention to the facts and to take as much time as they can to learn the facts before jumping to a conclusion, and certainly before depending on the mainstream media to give you their version of the facts or the evidence, because they will not. They're in bed with the military-industrial banking complex, and that's very well known and very well documented.
Yeah, we have definitely in Dearborn also experienced similar situations there. We have been in contact with the police with us many times. They have over and over tried to put pressure upon us to move the demonstration to a different location. Very interesting in Dearborn. They have four so-called free speech zones. I didn't really realize that was in the Constitution, but they have four free speech zones, and they have tried over and over to get us to move to a different zone. Of course, those zones do not include the Islamic Center there. They have also threatened, because of heightened security, the amount of news media that will be there. Actually, now from around the world, it has become quite a large event. They have now threatened to send us a bill for $100,000. What is very interesting that we just found out from one of our lawyers is that Dearborn, I believe, every year has what they call an Arab Fest there, in which I think 100 or 200,000 Arabs come. Almost half of the police force is there to moderate, protect them, and that they have never received a bill. But as soon as we announced that we were coming there, they talked about extra security. And if we come there, they will send us a bill for $100,000.
Sounds like they're violating the First Amendment to the United States Constitution.
Definitely, and they have also not approved our permit. They, in fact, have said probably our permit will be turned down. But that, of course, will not affect us. We have already made that very clear to them that whether they give us a permit to protest or not, we will be there on April 22nd at 5 p.m.
Now, you've been a pastor for several decades. Was it recently that you came to this awareness about Islam? How did that evolve? How did you get to the point where you felt that it was necessary for you to educate people about the threat that you feel Islam possesses?
This is definitely a recent thing. As you mentioned, I have been a pastor and in the ministry for over 30 years, and I quite honestly, for most of that time, never paid any attention to Islam, was not concerned about Islam, was not interested in Islam. I think it was somewhat of a gradual development that all of a sudden went fast. I think it started my last years on the mission field. As you mentioned there, I spent all my time in Germany. During that time, I slowly saw the development of radical Islam in Germany, in Europe. I began to see all of the problems that they have there in England, in places like Holland, in France. We are continually contacted by the European media, by people in Europe, that there's very much problem there. I believe just recently, the Bundeskanzlerin in Frau Merkel, she put out a statement saying that Muslims who live in Germany will not be governed under Sharia. We saw how whole neighborhoods came under Islamic control to the extent that the police were afraid to go in there. So we begin to see that slowly. And when we came back to America, we begin to see some of those things take place here. Of course, with the 9/11 event, but we begin to hear about honor killings, Sharia. We begin to hear about these things. And as that happened, we begin to feel very strongly that we needed to speak out, call an awareness to that, that we needed actually not to make the same mistake that Europe made. Europe closed their eyes to Islam for many, many generations. And we see now what has now happened. Islam has almost taken over Europe. I believe Europe still has some possibilities to redeem itself, but it will take some radical actions there. We see that places like France have already started to do some things with the banning of the burqa. So I think it was a developing thing through our mission work over there. And then when we came back to America, we saw the tendency here and felt as though we needed to definitely stand up, speak out, do something.
Okay. And in fact, just recently, over the past month or two, the political leaders of Germany and the United Kingdom both announced almost the same exact thing, that multiculturalism is dead.
Yes.
In those countries, that it was not successful. You're familiar with that, right?
I'm somewhat familiar with it, and I do know that, right, it has been pretty much widely declared as having been a failure, yes.
Have you ever read other holy books, like, for example, Judaism's books? Are you familiar with them at all?
I have not, no.
Many people claim that there's a lot of hate coming out of the Jewish holy books. They cite passages saying that it's okay for Jews to murder non-Jews. It's okay to do various other things to non-Jews. If you familiarized yourself with this book, would you consider doing something similar to the Jewish holy books?
I really don't know. I haven't taken the time to look at that. That would be actually very hard to answer. Right now, we feel very strong concerning the direction of Islam, not only so much because of what the Islamic book says. I realize there are other books or literature, or people pull things out of the Old Testament in the Bible. Our problem with a book like the Quran is not only what is in there, but actually the fruits of the Quran. The fruits of the Quran are not fruits in Quran-dominated countries of peace and freedom. We see in Israel there is somewhat freedom. So our problem with the Quran is not only what the Quran says, but the actual practicing of that religion in Muslim-dominated countries.
Okay. I'm looking at your website here, standupamericanow.org. You can get the book there, Islam is of the Devil. And there are coffee mugs and caps and T-shirts for sale. The caps and all of them say the same thing, Islam is of the Devil. Has anybody actually purchased any of these things?
Oh, yes. Yeah, definitely. We have sold not an overwhelming amount, but we have sold some, that is for sure.
So right now there's Americans walking around with T-shirts that say Islam is of the Devil.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess that's true.
Right. And this is America. They should be allowed to do that, right?
That's for sure.
Terry Jones, I want to thank you so much for the time you took out to explain all this to our listeners. And, of course, you're also the founder and president of Stand Up America Now, and that website can be accessed at standupamericanow.org. That's all lowercase, no spaces, of course. Your other website, which is doveworld.org, that's the Dove World Outreach Center. So, listeners, if you're interested in learning more about this, please go to those websites. And if this is something that you think you would want to support, then, of course, you can donate there. I'm sure that they would appreciate that. Pastor Jones, thanks so much for taking all this time out to explain this to our listeners.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me.